Welcome. Today, our friend Mercury went into backward motion. Mercury went retrograde. Does Mercury actually do that? Does he put on the brakes? No, not really. I don't know how to explain the phenomenon where it appears as though something's going backwards when something's going. I can't explain it to you technically because, anyway, it appears to be. But it does have an effect, as I think you all know, and we have universally seen this to be true. Mercury's backward motion or retrograde motion begins today, 27th of May. Extends typically for how long? Each time?
3 weeks.
How many times a year?
Three times
a year. So not the same dates every year. So we are in our second round of Mercury retrograde. The third one, it's on the website if you want to look at it. I can't remember. It's like September, October, I think. Anyway, this particular round of Mercury retrograde will end on June 19th. Okay? So, you know what it means. Things get a little harder to accomplish sometimes. Especially as it relates to machines, computers, communication systems, information systems, simple communication between people, travel arrangements, travel plans. Even Ryanair may not depart on time, which I can't for the life of me imagine that, but it might happen. And various other kinds of problems like that usually take place. Normally, the problems are reasonably small and irritating. However, we do have yet still the Mars in Cancer phenomenon, which we talked about. Mars is debilitated right now in Cancer in the sky up until the 21st of June. I think it was a total of 7 weeks, we had said. And it's also with K2. K2 is also in Cancer. And then we had the just a few short days after Mars going debilitated into Cancer, we had the cyclone in Burma, followed by earthquakes, plural, in China. Terrorist attacks in India, in Jaipur. June 15th, June 18th is the full moon. Something about the 15th, I can't recall.
The Venus just comes out of the Pisces.
Was that it? Or something else? Anyway.
Good stuff, Mars.
Full moon also. Maybe Mars is retrograde with K2 then. That's it. On June 15th, Mars and K2 will be in exact conjunction in the sky. 3 days later is the full moon. And oftentimes you will have major events, natural catastrophes, and events take place in or around the full moon or the new moon. Not always, but I've seen it many, many times. So on the 15th, Mars and K2 are like this. These are two of the schoolyard bullies in cahoots. And then 3 days later, we got the full moon. So we're getting up to the full moon. So I don't know what's going to happen then exactly.
So it could be earthquake or something like that.
Yeah. Well, it's bound to be something else. But a lot of people were killed this time round. you know, a lot of people. And even more horrendous is the fact that these poor people are being denied aid for weeks on end because of, you know, political wrangling. You know, you almost can't fathom that sort of thing. Anyway, Venus is still in Taurus. And the Sun is in Taurus. And Mercury's in Taurus. So that's your silver lining. There can also be at the same time a lot of nice things that will take place. It's a very creative time right now. Excellent time for planting. We told you that last week. Okay. So now, the mantra I thought we'd discuss is to stave off Mercury. We included that on the website. There are 9 major planets in the Vedic pantheon. The 7 major planets, Sun through Saturn. And how do you figure them out? You can just use the days of the week. That's how you figure them out. Sunday through Saturday. And plus Rahu and Ketu, the nodes of the moon. When any incarnation of Vishnu or God appears, each of the different incarnations appear through the dynasty of one of the planets. So the genealogy and the family connections and all that, actually Vedically very important. Very important. It's like, who's your daddy? They want to know. And they want to know how you're connected. In this day and age, the Iron Age, the age of Kali, if you know who your daddy is, you're doing well. You're real lucky. I, for one, had never met my father. So this is not uncommon in this day and age, you know. It took me 10 years to get his name out of my mother. 10 years. Again, not uncommon. So, Mercury in Sanskrit, what's the word for Mercury? Anybody know?
Buddha.
Buddha. Any guesses as to who took birth in the Mercury dynasty? Buddha. The difference is Mercury is spelled B-U-D-H-A and Buddha, the incarnation, is spelled B-U-D-D-H-A. So, extra D. Well, he's got the extra knowledge. They gave him an extra D. So Buddha is how you say it. Buddha. So, when you want to pacify a planet, of course, as we know, a planet, a god, a goddess, an energy, a circumstance, we can use a mantra. We can repeat a mantra. And so the very simple mantra, Om Shri Buddhaya Nama or Namaha. You can say Nama or you can say Namaha. If the word Nama appears at the end of a line or end of a sentence, then usually you say Namaha. Om Shri Buddhaya 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 Namaha.
Om Shri Buddhaya Namaha. Om Shri Buddhaya Namaha.
Om Shri Buddhaya Namaha. Om Shri Buddhaya Namaha. Om Shri Buddhaya Namaha. Om Shri Buddhaya Namaha. Okay. Now, we're chanting this, well, you can chant it for different reasons, but if we got a retrograde Mercury, perhaps by chanting this mantra, we can offset some of the difficulties with which we may be faced while in retrograde Mercury, such as if you're about to jump on an airplane and fly back to America, who knows? Of course, we don't wish any of that for you, but we might do that, chant that mantra. Now, Bud, the word Bud, from Bud we get Buddhi. Buddhi, what does Buddhi mean? Your Buddhi? With the Irish accent? It's my Buddhi. No, it's not your pal. It's intelligence. It's intelligence. It's discretion. It's discrimination. Buddhi. And Buddha sat under a banyan tree. Under that banyan tree, he became realized. He realized his divine nature. And that tree is called the
Bodhi
tree. Bodhi tree. Buddha, Buddhi, Bodhi. It's all kidding. That's how Sanskrit works. One thing emerges out of the next, like that. It's fascinating and makes complete sense. So, Mercury is the planet of
communication
and intellect, discretion, discrimination, knowledge, understanding. Jnana. Jnana means knowledge in Sanskrit. Mercury is the planet of knowledge, jnana. Jupiter is the planet of realization, realized knowledge, vijnana, jnana, knowledge, vijnana, realization, realized knowledge, not just information. You know, I heard that and such, there's information, could be true. But when you actually, I did it, as opposed to I heard it or somebody told me, I went and did it, and this is what I learned. Vijnana. So Mercury is jnana, knowledge, information, anything to do with that, and discretion and discrimination. Mercury is the conscious mind. Conscious mind. And sometimes we use this expression, you know, you're way too much in your head. That means you're thinking too much. You're thinking the thing to death. And that's too much of the jnana. Too much of trying to figure it out. Left brain. Logical, rational, clinical, analytical. The subconscious is what planet, do you know? Moon. Moon. Subconscious. 9/10 of the brain. Subconscious mind, 1/10. Subconscious, 9/10. So if you're in your head too much, which part are they talking about? The 1/10. Yeah, you're operating at a deficit. Hello. You know, get out of your head, move into your subconscious, your full being, your intuitive side, abstract, creative.
That's all the subconscious area. I would talk the other way around. Moving out of your head would be moving into consciousness, awareness of other people and reality.
Yeah.
But that's done intuitively.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I get it now. Yeah.
That's done intuitively.
When,
correct. When you read people, you don't read people intellectually.
Mm-hmm.
You read them intuitively.
Yeah.
When you get a new student coming in, Yeah, you're going to see, you know, what kind of skills and mechanical ability they have to start with, but you're going to read them on a whole other level to determine where the where the student's going to end up.
Yeah.
Way ahead of time. Because, you know, you'll get a feeling for whether they're actually going to turn out to be an accomplished player.
Yeah.
For example.
Yeah.
You as a teacher.
And what do they apply themselves and what are they...
Right. Yeah, and there's so many intangibles. How do you evaluate intangibles? With your tangible mind, with your conscious mind? Not usually. With your subconscious. Conscious mind is the seat of the ego. You know, the little guy with the Napoleonic complex? That's the ego. 1/10, hey, I'm in charge here. 9/10, subconscious mind is the seat of the self, soul, capital S, self. All right. Heart. Moon is heart. It's all heart. And subconscious mind. Right? The symbol for the subconscious is the... Correct, Pisces. Yes, but where does he live? The sea. The sea. The sea is expansive, goes on forever. And it is as deep as what? Who even knows? You cannot fathom it. It looks like nothing's going on. Just a flat surface. If there's no white caps, ain't nothing going on. Underneath, worlds. The fish. These are your ideas not yet made manifest. Not just your ideas, your problems too. Your addictions, your fears, your wounds, your judgments, your criticisms, your shame, your guilt. Stuff it into there. Will the ocean hold it? Oh yeah, easy. No problem. Until the tsunami comes. It all gets washed ashore. So that's what I was going to talk about a little bit, sort of in a roundabout way. Denying the gods. Denying the gods. We learn about the gods, divine beings, supernatural beings, or maybe even humans, but who do supernatural or singular deeds. And we learn about them through myths, legends, great stories. We've talked about Ram many times here. And of course, we talk about Krishna and we hear these stories. We know that, for example, that the story of Ram is spread all throughout all these different countries. Correct? Cambodia, Bali, Vietnam, India, Japan, China, Myanmar. You know, I'm missing some. Everybody knows about Ram, for example. So, a myth is a traditional story that narrates the exploits and adventures of human heroines, heroes, gods, demons, and other supernatural beings. These primal characters enable us to identify with them. In relation to our own struggles, challenges, losses, victories. But their story takes place on a whole other scale, way beyond ours. Our little world and our problems. Not that our problems aren't important or aren't legitimate, but we get all wrapped up in our little web. So these stories, myths, legends lift you. They have the power to lift you out of all that and tell you another tale about somebody else who's beyond your little experience or your subjective experience, and also that you can identify with or relate to. So a myth is meant to take us beyond the ordinary, the insipid, and the routine. Insipid is dull, everyday kind of life. It's meant to shake us out of our all-encompassing little world and invite us into the realms of larger-than-life characters. It's exciting already. We haven't even told the story. It helps to dwarf our petty day-to-day concerns. So we start thinking about things of greater import, greater scope, greater perspective. Well, do we not know you have problems? Yes, of course you have problems. Everybody has problems. You know, one thing I learned, of course you know this, but one thing I learned in doing 30 years of astrology is we're all messed up. Yeah, you're always waiting for that one person to walk through the door who's just got it all together. You know, they're firing on all cylinders, and, you know, they don't have any kind of major problems or issues that have to be dealt with. Well, they don't exist on this plane. They don't. Simply, they don't. Okay, so to elevate our perspective and to see with greater clarity the universal scheme of things. Because when we can lift ourselves to the mountaintop and see with that perspective, it just shakes the cobwebs out almost instantly, as you know. Myths are meant to deliver us from the depths of the mundane and the insignificant and raise us up to the realm of the sacred. Mundane, sacred. Profane, divine. Which one do you want to become embroiled in? Well, my choice would be divine, sacred. Because I've done the mundane and the profane, and I got mud on my boots to prove it. You know, especially today, it's called this rain. So to what happens in the realm of the divine and the sacred, wonderful, magical, inexplicable things take place. Way more exciting than what's happening down at Dundrum Shopping Center, even if there's a sale on. Way more exciting. The myth becomes a template for us for what is possible. What can be achieved if we would lend ourselves to? When things are neutral, you walk around like this. Head like this. Straight ahead. How often, as you walk down the path of life, have you walked like this? Or hunched over, head bent. What's wrong? Nothing. Look at me. No. Leave me alone. How often have we done that? Compared to how often do you do this? Look up to the sacred, to the divine. You want to identify with this? The mundane, the horizontal, So life takes place down here on the horizontal plane. Worse yet, do you want to identify with this? Facing toward the dirt? Or do you want to lift yourself up? Lift up your gaze. Okay. Beyond the fears and limitations inherent in the human condition. A myth or sacred story can bridge the build a bridge to cross over the confines of time and space to the domain of the eternal and spiritual. If all of your identification is with the temporal and time, which ends, and space, which is limited, then guess what? It'll all come to an end for you. It'll all come crashing down. Guaranteed. Guaranteed. When there's a very powerful story or myth, they tend to do what? Form a ritual around it. And reenact it when? Over and over and over. In Catholicism, they bless the bread, bless the wine, change the water into wine, or change the blood. There's an alchemical thing that takes place between the body and the blood of Christ is the concept. And that energy is transformed or transferred into the bread, the wine, the water. And how often do they play out this ritual? Every day. People come maybe to church once a week. Nowadays, not so much. But they do it every day. So we can do it. We honor a myth by enacting the ritual connected to it, or we honor the myth simply by honoring the myth, by talking about it and giving it validity, acknowledgement, energy, respect, acceptance. Correct? So we don't necessarily have to reenact it technically. Now, what is the theme in any myth, any culture, any civilization? The clash between good and evil. You all know it. How do you all know it? Because it's mythical. It's archetypal. That's it.
What?
It's life. So, usually it's between the gods and the demons. It's Dublin versus Cork.
Indiana Jones.
It's Indiana Jones versus the witch.
James Bond, Batman.
Yeah, James Bond versus Goldfinger. Batman versus the Riddler.
That's it.
And it is in society the conflict between constructive forces, destructive forces, and within our psyche, it's the conflict between the lower nature and the higher nature. What level or on what plane is this not taking place down here in the material world? It's taking place on every plane. Every plane. You're creating your own myth as you go, are you not? Day in and day out. He's a legend in his own time. course, the joke that they made from that, he's a legend in his own mind. Myth also recognizes the difficulty that we all suffer, the difficulty and the common lot shared by all. And it inspires us to transcend, to go beyond our suffering. To know that these people or this person, even Ram, who was an incarnation of Vishnu, of God, lost his kingdom. His kingdom was taken away from him. The day before he was due to be crowned, no, the same day, the morning of the same day, he was banished to the forest for 14 years. That's his story. That's what happened to him. Did anything happen to you on that level? I know stuff happened to you, but that bad? You know, so then we can identify. So we learned through myth to transcend suffering, and more significantly, if you can, to help others rise above it. So when you become real compassionate and inspired, then it's not just about you. You can help others. I know when I'm really stuck in my stuff, which of course happens, one of the best things for me is when I'm busy helping others. Because I can throw myself into that very quickly and happily, and I just forget all about my stuff. And I get a lot of satisfaction out of being able to help other people. So to be able to rise above the suffering, to transcend the suffering, and to help others transcend the suffering, this is the realm of the gods. This is the true definition of the sacred space. That's what it takes. To be caught up in your stuff and unable to extricate yourself from it is you being stuck in the mundane and the profane. To rise above it is divine. That's how you can gauge where you're at and how you're doing. Okay, what are the archetypes? The archetypes are primal imprints in everybody's psyche. Heroes, heroines. So when you were a kid, you had heroes, people you looked up to. Boys often have sports heroes, would have sports heroes, actors, actresses, girls would have, I don't know, I wasn't a girl. So maybe you can help me with that. Girls would have pop idols, Boyzone, Westlife, Get a Life. That's my joke. Whomever, different people, actresses again, or different people. So we look up to these role models, because role models is imprinted in the collective mind. In the Bhagavad Gita, which Krishna spoke to Arjuna, we've talked about numerous times, Krishna said to Arjuna, whatever great men do, or whatever great persons do, lesser persons follow. Is this true? Sometimes, in this day and age, not even great persons have to do something, and lesser persons will follow, such as fads and fashions and, you know, those kinds of things. Archetype literally means first pattern. First pattern. Prototype. Yeah, this one's no good. Next. Bill is telling us a very interesting technology, about an interesting technology today called lithography.
Oh, SLA, yeah.
What's the whole term?
Stereolithography.
You can design something on a CAD computer, computer-assisted design, like a, you know, an object, like a...
Anything three-dimensional.
And they will take that design from the computer program and put it into this lithography machine.
Yeah, it's free laser into a liquid. And where they collide, it manifests. And it becomes a three-dimensional object. It grows
in a liquid bath. And it turns into a three-dimensional object from the laser beams. So there's your archetype. Thought that was pretty cool. You can have that done for $5,000 in the US or $300 in China. That's why everyone goes to China these days. Okay, so the archetypes are primal instincts or blueprints of our fundamental human drives and aspirations. They transcend race, color, creed, any kind of conditioning or any kind of patterning, any kind of bias or prejudice. They transcend it. The highest manifestation of the archetypal figure is God. King, yes. Down here. God, ultimately, is the highest manifestation. And gods are divine beings with superhuman qualities and abilities. And the Christian pantheon, they are angels, archangels. You could throw a few saints in. Mm-hmm. All right. Okay. So I started by saying denying the gods. What happens when we deny the gods? When we deny the gods within, when we deny the gods without, what happens when we deny our spiritual nature?
Suffering.
The spiritual nature. The truth or belief in a higher presence, higher divine nature, higher sacred reality. What happens when we divine this? Sometimes people say, You're putting your faith in an arbitrary system of belief. You believe in the Vedic yoga philosophy. Yeah, good for you. The next person believes in Christianity, and the next one believes in Islam, and the next one believes in Buddhism, and so you go. Who cares? Everybody must place their faith in something and someone or someone. You cannot live in this world without placing your faith in something. If you want to place, if you say all that religion and spirituality is nonsense, I put my faith in the scientists. They have science behind them. They have PhDs from good schools. Okay, well then you're placing your faith in science. I place my faith in the New York Times. That's my Bible. Whatever they say, that's I believe it. I place my faith in George Bush. He says, we go to war, we go to war. Why? I'm not quite sure, but I believe him. You got to place your faith in something. So now you have to choose. You know, you place your faith in your loved one, don't you? Does the child not place the faith in the parent? What kind of faith is it? It's unconditional faith, right? So, Carl Jung, the eminent Swiss psychologist, and I say eminent because this man was truly, truly remarkable. Very, very attuned guy. Stay with me now, Nicole.
Nicole's getting a hard time
seeing. Very attuned guy. Right near you, Switzerland, right? Close to where you came from. And highly realized soul, Carl Jung. He said, we no longer believe in the reality of Olympus. What's Olympus? The seat of the gods, correct? According to the Greek pantheon. What?
Olympus.
What's that?
Where the gods meet.
Yeah.
Okay.
Valhalla.
Okay.
So.
Olympus.
Don't know that one. Yeah, where the gods meet, and in Sanskrit. The higher realms in the material world, the heavenly realms, are called Swarga. Swarga. So, to deny the gods is to deny the inherent strengths in our own nature. I deny the gods, well now I'm dependent on what? I have to be dependent on something. Now I'm dependent upon the newspaper, society, science, the prime minister, the neighbor. All right. Hopefully you're not dependent on somebody who's a flim-flam man. Because if you are, you're going to be in trouble.
If you could just have that as an intention every single morning.
What's that?
That you're totally surrendering. And that everything else you're going to do during the day is guided rather than orchestrated by your own mind.
Exactly. Well put. Exactly. Because we have denied the place of the gods in our life, the gods within us are reduced to symptoms. Instead of fully realized energy qualities, divine characteristics, they're reduced to symptoms. Oh, you want to hear my symptoms? You want me to tell you all the symptoms I got? Can you diagnose this? Do you think you can diagnose what I got? I've got symptoms. List is this long. It's the Jewish joke. So, Aunt Ella, how are you feeling? How am I feeling? Don't get me started. Don't even ask me. I got so many problems. Okay. To deny the gods is to affirm our weaknesses. To deny the gods is to yield to the overwhelming power of the material nature to bring us to our knees. Thank you very much for that, Bill. Illustration. Bill's a form is taken a posture. Well, not quite on his knees, but
even shell.
It is to admit our defeat. To deny the gods equals certain death. Guaranteed. I can't do it. I'm not strong enough. If only. But that's what happens. Have you seen it happen? How many times? Repeatedly. Okay. The thunderbolt of Indra. Indra is the king of the gods. If we can call upon the thunderbolt of Indra, that's his weapon, it is meant to lead to enlightenment. To use the power of that light and fire and break through all the illusion. But no, I can't call on that thunderbolt in that constructive way. So it only becomes a muted or repressed symptom in me and results in migraine headaches. Because I can't think. And I can't think clearly. I'm confused and I don't know what the answer is. That's what happens. Yeah, that's what migraines are. Conflict of ideas. Migraines are also anger. Instead of calling upon the fire god, Agni. Agni is the name of the fire god. From this we get the word ignition. Ignite. Right? Agni. Instead of calling upon the fire god, Agni, to ignite the passion of our higher purpose, we burn in the flames of envy because our neighbor has this, this, and this. Why does he have that? Why does she look like that? And I only have this. We are burned by the flames of envy. So our passion and our zeal is reduced to a negative symptom. Instead of the arrows of Kamadev. Who's Kamadev? Cupid. He's called Kama or Kandarpa in Sanskrit. Instead of opening our hearts to love, being loved, allowing love in, and loving beyond conditions, what happens? We're seized with the pains of angina, constricting our hearts and causing emotional trauma. Heart disease in this modern age, how many people got heart disease? Skyrocketing. Skyrocketing since the Second World War. They're all suffering from a broken heart. What is a broken heart if not heart disease? That is the symptom. Instead of swift and steady progress, moving forward in life, propelled by the wind god, Vayu, off we go. We are run down by what? Chronic fatigue syndrome. Epstein-Barr. Oh, I don't know even know how to pronounce it, but I know I got it. No energy. You know how many clients of mine have Epstein-Barr, chronic fatigue? Hundreds. Hundreds of them. God bless them. Instead of tasting the divine ecstasy by drinking the soma juice, the amrit, the nectar of immortality quaffed by the gods, what do? And I'm going to pass on that. I'm going to go for obsessions, compulsions, some mundane addictions. I'm going to choose those.
Hard liquor.
Hard liquor, hard drugs, soft drugs. Pharmaceuticals.
Gambling.
Psychotropics. Gambling, sex addictions.
Chocolate.
I was looking at you and I was thinking chalky. And then, you know, chocolate shopping. Whose satisfaction is always fleeting and whose consequence is often terminal. Terminado. For a woman who denies her natural role as nurturer, which are perfectly symbolized by her breasts. These symbols of lovely, divine, female nurturing. All right? They even named a mountain range after them in Wyoming. Les grands tétons. The grand tétons, the big tits. That is the name of the mountain range in Wyoming.
Yeah?
Antonio's going there for his next holiday.
Tomorrow.
No, retrograde Mercury. You better wait, buddy.
I better wait the 50s.
So instead of enjoying her role as nurturer, symbolized by those breasts, she may be consumed by the cancer of resentment through the abandonment of her feminine nature. What is the level of breast cancer in the world today? Skyrocketed. It is skyrocketed because of the disconnection with the feminine and because of the male attitude toward the feminine. And of course, if you get breast cancer and you got to go and have surgery, guess who's slicing and dicing you?
A
man. 99 times out of 100. It's a man, ladies. Well, hi, darling. Let me just cut that out for you. Think about it. I know he's helping you. They had a doctor here who was, all you had to do was show up at his office and your womb was gone.
Yeah.
This guy was slicing and dicing every womb of every Irish woman who walked into his office. He's a chronic hysterectomy guy. In fact, I think they took his license away. He's up on charges. So he's playing it all out. So, as it says in the Gospel, according to Thomas, if you bring forth what is within you, it'll save you. If you fail to bring forth what is within you, it'll destroy you. Creative action, creative impulse, creative urge simply travels upward. Right? Mm-hmm. Now let's go to the ghetto. Let's go to the barrio. Let's go to places like, portions of Queens, Ballymun maybe. And here's your creative energy, and it's traveling upward. And then it hits the ceiling, it hits the place where it's got nowhere to go. There's no outlet for it, right? So what happens to it? It gets redirected back down where it came from. From construction, it goes to destruction. And then what happens? Go to the ghetto. And you'll see what happens. And go to any ghetto, in any country, in any city, anywhere in the world, and it's more or less the same thing. That's what's happening. Correct? Because that divine spark, that creative spark, is not being realized, it's not being expressed. Like the gods, the archetypes are immortal. They cannot be killed off. You can be killed off, but they can't be killed off. If you deny the gods, if you fail to align yourself with divine will and divine identity, divine identification, you will get killed off. You will meet death. How often can this happen? The universe is in no hurry. You can have thousands of opportunities. You can have thousands of lives. Oh, you didn't quite get it right? Oh, that's okay. No problem. You come back. I'll give you another one. But I don't want another one. Oh, no. Well, if you don't want another one, then align yourselves with the gods. Stop denying the gods. Otherwise, if these tendencies are repressed, they will turn inhuman and destructive. It is like keeping a powerful animal in a cage. If its frustration, anger, and resentment will build up over a period of time. And then at some point, it may break free. And all hell will break loose. The same archetypal energy, if not cultivated, will revert back to its primitive nature. Dr. Jekyll and the evil Mr. Hyde. Right? And then, of course, this plays out on the big scale. We got genocide. Let's just kill off a whole bunch of people. In Africa, you know, in any time in Africa, there's some sort of genocide going on. You pick two countries, you know, you can almost roll the dice. You know, they had the Hutus and the Tutsis back in the day. Bill and Martha were sailing in the Adriatic up along the coast of Croatia. We were talking about a lot of Irish people now are investing in property in Croatia, Hungary, which is not the Balkans. But Croatia, I mean, I made a joke. I said, yeah, how long has it been stable now since, what, yesterday?
Yeah.
You know, some of these places, you know, here's the funniest thing that you'll ever hear. The Middle East peace accords. Well, we're going back to the bargaining table for the Middle East peace accords. Oh, yeah? That sounds like a worthwhile project. I'm sure that'll stick. That'll hold. Now, I don't mean they shouldn't try, but it's like, you know, some places. Disease at epidemics. We look at women, especially more and more and more now, sex object. Skimpier clothes, really provocative dance. You know, you can turn on fashion TV right now and watch a 14 or 15 year old girl who looks dynamite. She looks great. Prancing down the runway, totally made up, like a fully grown woman, mm-hmm. and clothed, you know, in the most appealing and provocative manner. But she's 15. So instead of looking at her in this manner, with Vedic iconography, the goddesses always have a crown. There they are. There's Lakshmi, there's Radha. The emphasis is on the crown to get you to focus on their psychology, not on their physiology. You're not supposed to become enamored with them as sex objects. You're supposed to focus on the value of the feminine psychology. That's what crowns them.
But the British, when they went down to India, there were so many erotic carvings on some of the temples that they thought there were a bunch of pornos. So I think maybe you should describe the difference between those sort of temples and carvings and who they're for.
Yeah, well, that's more of the Shakta cult and tantric. I hadn't got that far yet, but it's a good question. I'll answer it now. There's the left-hand path, there's the right-hand path. All right? The right-hand path is the path of virtue, dharma, morality, right? Doing good deeds, like we talk about vratas, we're going to chant mantras, we're going to make a vow, or we're going to maybe fast, we're going to practice yoga, we're going to practice meditation. This is the right-hand path. This is all very positive. The left-hand path is you're going to indulge in every sin, vice, and iniquity there is known to man. That's the left-hand path. But in order to do this, they do a lot of practice of raising the kundalini, empowering up, so they can handle that energy when they dip themselves into that sort of pool of iniquity, if you will. Because, as you know, let's take an example. Rock star. You know, rock stars jump full body into the ocean of sense gratification with wine, women, song, drugs, many of them. But can you handle that? Can you cope with it? Are you going to swallow a few mouthfuls of that for you? Or is it going to swallow you? So that's the left-hand path, not so much for the rock star, but there are tantrics, practitioners of tantra who do this consciously and drink and have sex with everybody in all kinds of ways and, you know, whatever it might be. That is a path. And that path is meant to also lead you to the point of satiation. Okay, I've done it all. I had enough. I'm not, you know, it doesn't hold anything for me anymore. Mm-hmm. I'm numb to it now. I'm inured to it. Mm-hmm. So that it is a path, but it's not an easy path to walk. I mean, you could smile and sounds fun though. Yeah, but you can get swallowed up. You know, just as the rock stars do.
Surely what community is referring to is, isn't there an increasing, maybe wrong, but school of thought that, you know, through legitimate sexuality, you can get to spirituality. You can use sexuality
yeah,
for various
You can also do that.
It doesn't have to be...
Is that what you meant?
Yeah, that too. Because
yeah,
people
like
can think of image of Indian women and there's two definitely...
Yeah, well, Indian women are very chaste and modest. And but the positive thing about that, I mean, the temples with the erotic carvings is it's not looked upon in a prudish sense. You know, this is part of life too. There is legitimacy or a time and a place for that as well.
So it's not decadent. It's not porn. It's not sacred.
Anything can be used to raise consciousness.
Yeah.
But, you know, when somebody comes addicted to porn or to, you know, addicted to sex or addicted to this or that, that's a whole other state of mind. So this can be used. But anything can be used in the service of God, depending on consciousness.
Effectively, those carvings or temples or whatever are... celebrating the non-addictive particular aspects of sexuality and physical existence.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know...
But Westerners see them as...
Yeah, but you see, you also have to look...
Yeah.
Different people are on different levels of advancement, spiritually speaking. So you're not going to tell somebody who's thinking about sex all the time to absolutely forget about sex and just practice meditation and yoga.
Yeah. Yeah.
That may not work for that person. So you're not really doing them a service.
Yeah.
By recommending that, you're doing a disservice. So if sex can be seen rather than as something that is dark, shameful, everything is part of the divine, ultimately. So if it can lead you to God, yeah, because you have to go down that path for your own development,
mm-hmm.
for your own experience,
then
it may have legitimacy.
With the Roman Catholic upbringing here in Ireland, my upbringing anyway, was very much anything to do with sexuality was necessarily, you know, dangerous, dark, negative. You know, very little of it. Only in marriage and only behind strict closed doors was it seen as acceptable, and even then it was not to be discussed. So,
right.
You know, this what Canute's describing, what you see, you know, when you read up on these things, is that there's a lot more openness in the Vedic.
Yeah.
Openness is the key word, I think. It's not, you know, it's not blatant or pornographic or anything. It's just.
And it's not judgmental.
No, it's not judgmental. It's natural. It's part of physical existence, and it's just if you want, as celebratory and just as spiritual, if you want. As other ways of living.
It's a tolerance for everyone.
Yeah,
it's a tolerance.
And an openness and acceptance. We didn't have that here in Ireland, in my opinion, growing up, you know.
It's the consciousness of the observer.
Yeah.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
It's also the consciousness of the observer. Usually the thing people are most afraid of and condemn the loudest is the thing that they're most drawn to. That's the thing they're most interested in. And because they are having that inner conflict in themselves, they're yelling the loudest about it. You know, it's common knowledge that Hitler's father was a Jew who abandoned the family when Hitler was a young boy. And he came to, how did he come upon that, oh yeah, we have to get rid of all the Jews? Because this was a theme in his life.
This is
his issue.
So if he'd just forgiven his father, it's okay.
Well, yeah, if he could have worked that out on a psychological, emotional level, then he wouldn't necessarily have had to play it out on such an archetypal level.
I mean, but today it's quite shocking. Certainly, you don't believe when you read the paper with some figure of authority, usually a politician, who is trying to actually claim to be cleaning up a certain area of life, be it drugs or whatever, is himself involved or herself involved in that aspect.
Yeah,
it's caught, you know, morally trying to clean up society. That is their campaign. That is their program. That is what their agenda is. And they're actually caught indulging the same thing. I often wonder, is it because they're in close proximity to it that they get sucked in? Or, as you're saying now, they already have that issue inside. They're shouting the loudest about it. Basically, they're shouting to themselves because they haven't resolved it inside.
And they're repressing their real self.
Yeah.
Or many times they're not repressing it. They're actually playing it out. There's a lot of these evangelist preachers down in the south of the states, southern states, hellfire and brimstone preachers, we call them, who are preaching against sex and the iniquity of sins of the flesh, and they're having sex with anything that isn't tied down.
The Catholic Church just went through a terrible.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the Catholic Church is actually, especially the American Catholic Church, well, here a little bit too, is actually worse because there's the rampant corruption of children performed by the clergy. The worst sin there is the corruption of children. That's at the top. Because once you corrupt a child, you essentially have wiped out that life. It is almost impossible to reclaim that life for that soul. Almost impossible.
Yeah, and then whatever that kid wants to
perpetrate on the next person.
Yeah, on their children. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was, that's...
And you've got the theory that a lot of priests, and nuns there, perpetrating this abuse where themselves abuse. That's becoming more unclean here as well.
But then there's the denial of their own sexuality.
Absolutely, there is that too. Yeah. And associating celibacy or successfully being celibate would be more spiritual, and that's a conflict for them too.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily clearly laid out or explained in the Catholic doctrine.
Right.
It's not necessarily covered for reasons we spoke about before, because sexuality is not something that the Church, Catholic Church, is that comfortable discussing. So it can't actually... If you need to go to a superior, I believe, to actually discuss, you're questioning your ability to maintain your celibacy or whatever, there isn't an awful lot of feedback or help, because it's an organisation that's not comfortable with that subject anyway. So, and there's when you really need some counselling. So very often these guys were turned away and told, look, just offer it up, pray a bit more on it, hang in there. And, year after year after year, they can't deal with this. And so there's a massive conflict, and then you get this abuse as the only outlet left.
In the Vedic tradition, priests marry.
Right.
And most priests that do rituals and... to kind of take care of things for the congregation, they're all married. And those who want to be celibate monks can be.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't make you any less spiritual if you're married or, if you're in a monogamous relationship. So, yeah. So, we must build a bridge between what we know to be true about ourselves and what we keep hidden in the shadows of our denial. We must build this bridge. When this line of communication is opened up, we will gain insights about our true nature, heal our many wounds, and step into the zenith of our personal power and fulfillment. And that will be the result of accepting the gods, accepting your divine nature, your divine right, to claim your divine right, and to place your precious faith in that which is eternal and will raise you up and lift you up to the realization of that birthright. Okay. Good. You know, this is so typical me. I've got about 20 pages of notes here. Of course, I only got through 4. Okay, any other comments? Questions, comments? Sharing? Daring? Caring?
Well, one thing that was up, the only thing this week when I was reading papers that really got me quite sort of, was there was a thing, because it comes up a lot, and I feel that if I was a spokeswoman for something, I'd probably end up saying it, and I'd have the Catholic Church right against me. It's about abortion, and it was saying that there should be a law against women having abortion. And I mean, I've never had one, but it just really rose an anger in me. I was like, why, you know, can women not make up their minds? I was like, such a chance.
Abortion has a certain inevitability in our world. Since time immemorial, there have been abortions. You know, speaking of the clergy and nunneries, I mean, there are famous nunneries that where all the fetuses are buried, just down or in the tunnel underneath the nunnery. I've heard stories like that. All these nuns who had gotten pregnant. Mm-hmm. Anyway, the higher concept, according to Vedic understanding, in order for a child to grow in the womb, a soul has to be there. So the soul is present, or there would be no growth. That's the premise on which growth can take place, is the presence of a soul. This could be a plant, a little bug walking around. There's a soul. So it is very much a symptom of the Iron Age that we're in now, of women killing off the unborn fetus. That was not so widely done in earlier eras like the Golden Age, the Silver Age, or the Bronze Age. But as we diminish in consciousness, in values, in ethics, in morals, as you can see we are, then we will do more and more of this. You heard the stories in America of girls going to the prom, giving birth in the toilet stall in the girls' bathroom, throwing the fetus into the bin, and returning to the dance. The prom. There's a couple of persons that did this. Or throwing the fetus out in the back in the dumpster. The, what do you call it here? The tip.
Skip. How do you want to do?
They didn't abort them. They gave birth and tossed them.
Oh, so the baby.
Yeah.
These are not abortions. These are births. This is Kali Yuga. You see, so more and more of this. I understand your point. Your point is, how dare the government tell women what to do? Abortions are going to happen. And, I mean, this is a very touchy subject. You can argue the ins and outs of this. The higher principle is, it's better not to abort. And I have worked with hundreds of women who have had abortions and worked with many of them through guided healing meditation because of the emotional trauma and wounding that that has caused.
Absolutely.
And some of them are real sort of hardcore women, tough, strong, you know, real masculine. Oh yeah, don't worry, I can handle anything. And yet they can and they can't. You know, this sort of thing can weigh very heavily on a person. So I'm not going to argue what the government should or shouldn't do, because no matter what the government says, abortions will take place, guaranteed.
But isn't there a situation, or maybe there isn't, where souls choose to come down and be aborted before? You know,
well, yeah, I mean, it is karmic. I mean, there's no question about it. But sometimes that's a negative in that you've disrupted that soul's life in an untimely fashion. Other times, these souls, like in a miscarriage, they don't have to be here very long. Hey, I'm out of here. I only have to come down for a month and live in your stuffy old womb. Oh, it's cramped, it doesn't smell good, and it's a lot of bad sounds.
Especially rough.
A womb, according to the Vedas, living in the womb is...
Really?
Oh, it's terrible.
I don't think that.
Yeah, that's what the humans tell you. Oh, and the little one... Oh, he's kicking. Isn't that cute? He's going, get me out of here! It's terrible in there.
What must they have done to you?
Absolutely. It's not me. It's not my opinion.
Will it make sense hearing you reframe it back? Bless her. Because remember you said that it's the duty of the king to...
She's awake.
...protect its...
Correct.
So that's probably what he's playing about then. The government's trying to protect its people. By
It's not telling the women that they can't do something.
Oh.
Really, like, if you get very complicated about it, then you're protecting a soul just like any other plant or animal or human that's wandering on the planet too.
But you know, it also, again, ideally, that woman should have been protected from getting pregnant, getting an unwanted pregnancy. So we wouldn't have to get as far as abortion. You see, so if some government person came to you and said, okay, so now for the next 6 months you're not having sex with anybody because we're monitoring you. You tell them to take a hike or jump off the nearest pier.
More realistically.
Oh, okay, well then I'll take that back. In her case, she doesn't really care about that.
But I suppose if you were to go back, I mean, I suppose if you have to trace it, then is it due to women to try and talk to their men to try and see if they can love their women better by not having the problem with this?
Yeah, but you know, I mean, these things happen.
What we're saying is that the government should be looking at the drink laws, particularly in this country. The freedom of access to drink and the culture that we have and hitting it, because you've got road deaths which are just absolutely unnecessary because of this, and you've got this situation we're talking about where women, you know, have this big debate at the moment as to whether, you know, it's alarming, women and men, the amount of abortions going on. Really, a lot of it, I would say, is drink related and attitude related.
Yeah, well, there's no question about it.
And hit women hard.
Kali Yuga, it's
Kali. Just think about drinking. Think about why you drink or who you drink with.
Well, just watch a rap video.
Yes.
So you got the rapper, and he's laying down the lyric. He's laying down the song. And you've got 20 girls in G-strings.
They're not girls, they're bitches. They're his bitches.
His bitches and his hoes. And they're gyrating all around him in G-strings. Yeah. And they got all kinds of interesting close-ups with the camera.
You've watched this, Drew. You've watched these bitches.
I have seen them. I have seen them. They've invaded my home. By virtue of my wife selecting MTV. I should have waited. She was back in the room before I said it. No, I mean, of course. And what message is there? I mean, what message is there? I'm not blaming you for it, dear.
And then you're back to your catwalk, your fashion catwalk, and your 15-year-old.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, so there you go. So, you know, if you keep tossing that in front of a guy's face, like they're doing, what do you think he's going to want to do?
But they're tossing it for the women's
face. If not pray...
Yeah, the women
are looking at this and thinking, this is cool, that guy's great, and he's got all the...
Yeah,
women.
I'm just going to go, you know, give it
girls.
To him right now. I'm going to...
One of those girls. I want to get selected to be one of those girls.
Yeah.
That's where it's
yeah.
at.
That's where it's at.
I think that's what being on the boat.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. These are my heroines.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
Well, yeah, so
that's
so... I'm not a woman, so...
Yeah, why doesn't he like me?
Yeah.
Why does he like her?
Yeah.
But there's also the part of, you know, sexuality was so repressed for so long. So it's like the pendulum. It goes
that's
like
true.
It was
that's
way
true.
Over there, being suppressed. And that.
Well, I mean, that's true, I think, for certain countries, Colette.
Yeah.
Definitely here. America is a fairly repressed country sexually. Now, you wouldn't think so, but you have to remember that America was founded by pilgrims and Puritans. That's who founded America. They were too holier than thou. They were too much of zealots. They said, hey, this is a boat. You get on it and get the hell out of here and take all your goodies. And their name was often Goody, Goody this and Goody that. Goody two shoes. And head off to the New World and you can have your Puritan ethic. That's who founded America. Not Canada, by the way, but America. So that kind of thing, this overzealous thing, is very much in America, especially in the Bible Belt through the South. And yes, in that case, yeah, in Ireland, yes. I don't see Italy and France as being particularly repressed sexually, or Denmark or Sweden. Over the years.
And so would the, like, the rape, yeah, the cases of rape then be statistically then lower?
In those countries?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that for a fact, but it's probably true. Mm-hmm. Yeah. If when you make something a taboo, yeah. This is naughty. You can't have it. Well, then everybody wants it. You know, when I was a kid, all I had to hear from my parents... Oh, this is bad. You can't have, well, guaranteed I'll go out and get two of them. You know, for sure. But if no one pointed it out and made a deal out of it,
yeah.
You know, my mother used to say, my mother and father both smoked cigarettes. She used to do her own, roll your own, right? And they had this little green glass jar on the coffee table stuffed with export tobacco, cigarettes. Export is like the strongest imaginable, right? So I'm 5 years old, you know. My parents are smoking. And that tells you a lot about the asthma I suffered as a baby. Anyway, so my mother would say to me, you want a cigarette? Help yourself. Go ahead. Smoke. She'd be telling me, 5, 6, 7 years old, knock yourself out. Here, let me get you some matches. I put it in my mouth, she'd light it, you know. Just take it, and when you do it, take a big drag like this. That's what she told me. And I thought, yeah, maybe one day I didn't do it. Finally, I did it, you know. I almost passed out. You know. But it took the lure away.
Magic.
Yeah, because she, in her mind was, you know, one or two puffs on that thing, this guy will be finished. Let's... Too short meditation. Yeah. Close your eyes. Breathe. Relax. And let go. Allow the stress, tension, fear, and apprehension to drain from your body. Totally, completely relax. Breathe and let go. Deeply, deeply relax and let go. High above, a beautiful beam of radiant light comes down, down, all the way down, entering through the top of your head, expanding throughout your head, torso, arms and legs, out the bottom of your feet and into the earth below. Breathe, relax. And let go. See and feel yourself by means of this pearl white light, connected to the heavens above and grounded in the earth below. Relax and let go. All right. You're in the place of the gods, the divine realm, Swarga, Olympus. And you've come there to unlock your divine qualities, or a single divine quality. You've come there to unlock your power. You've come there to realize your potential. Notice where you are, what it looks like, the architecture, or the beauty of nature around you. This magnificent place. Now, who comes to greet you? Which godly angelic being comes to greet you? Who is she? Who is he? What is their attitude? What is their disposition? How do they greet you? Now, what quality or ability or divine gift have you come there to unlock? Do you tell them what it is, or do they tell you what it is? What is it? What is that quality? What does this divine being say you must do to unlock this divine trait in yourself? Are you willing to do it? Are you willing to do it? Continue with the meditation until it reaches its natural conclusion. When you are done, thank this godly being and return to consciousness, awakening, feeling refreshed, relaxed, and at peace.